All week long, we've taken a look at the family history of Evan Ramsey. He's the student who went on a killing spree at the Bethel High School 2 years ago. During the trial, his jury was not allowed to hear about the abuse Ramsey suffered, but many of the things that happened to the Ramsey children have become alarmingly all too common. We warn you, the stories you are about to hear are explicit. Rhonda McBride reports.
During Evan Ramsey's murder trial, news reporters and even the prosecutor regularly mispronounced the boy's name. He was Evan, sometimes Yvonne. And just as no one could say his name, no one could name the reasons why he killed. Now, after almost 2 years in prison, Evan has had a lot of time to think.
There are several things. Dealing with not knowing who my father was, living with an alcoholic mother and abusive boyfriends, then I get taken away from my mother and put in foster homes, which the intention was good, but it turned out I got stuck in some twisted foster homes.
All of these experiences boil down to an intense self-hatred.
I didn't think too highly of myself. Now I think more highly of myself.
At last, with two people dead and a community violated, Evan Ramsey has finally been validated.
I need to test the transcription while Dave's camera's up.
A story on 60 Minutes is perhaps one of the ultimate forms of validation in our country. The job of telling Evan's story falls to reporter Carol Marine.
I am struck by how deeply and profoundly affected every member of the Bethel community has been by this. I have seldom seen a community that exhibits so much pain.
Pain born of pain. Sometime in January, the nation will hear about a cycle of suffering that can be traced as far back at least as October 1986, when Evan's father, Don Ramsey, stormed the Anchorage Times newspaper office with guns and grenades. After Evan's father went to jail, his mother Carolyn's addiction to alcohol and angry men created another prison for Evan and his brothers. But the boys still love their mother.
Being able to visit my mother was one of the things that always seemed to make me happy.
Evan's mother Carolyn says despite all that's happened, the two still have a powerful bond.
He was such a joy, you know. You know, he was my baby, he was my son. It's like our heart touched.
One Christmas, the urge to renew that bond took Evan and his younger brother William to the Yukon River village of Holy Cross. William says when they arrived, their mother handed them a catalog and said,
"You guys pick what you guys want, tell me what you want, and I'll order it, and then you can get it for Christmas." And we're like, "All right." So we started looking through the catalog saying, "Okay, oh, we want this."
But the presents were forgotten when Carolyn started drinking, and then there was her boyfriend.
He started drinking too, getting all violent with my mom, throwing her against the couch, making her back all bruised up and bloody, and then letting dogs go in there and poop everywhere, pee everywhere.
Later, after talking Carolyn's boyfriend into giving up a gun, a police officer put the boys on a plane back to their foster home in Bethel. The boys shrugged it off, long accustomed to life's unpredictability, even in some of their foster homes. In one of them, a foster parent's kid pinched their faces. The red welts caught the attention of teachers. They reported it to social workers who learned of abuse that left more permanent scars.
When it would happen is when his dad, his mom, and his sister wouldn't be home. And he'd get us to go out on the porch. And he'd tell us, "Get on your knees." We just listened, you know, because we were small and he was like 14 or 15. And he said, "I put your head back," and he'd take it, you know, and then piss in our mouth.
Robin Carr Morris, a nationally recognized expert on child abuse and co-author of the book Ghosts from the Nursery, says such abuse can permanently poison a child's brain. Because when infants and children are exposed to violence, it activates the brain's primitive fight or flight mechanism.
The lower brain functions are constantly on red alert, creating a difference in how that child is breathing, how they are regulating body temperature, how they're regulating their blood pressure, how they're sleeping at night. Their whole system is on hypervigilance.
And if this state of hypervigilance is chronic, the inner child may be stunted forever.
Our babies are absorbing toxic experiences like each of those in growing numbers. if the child's ability to connect to other people, if no one ever relates to them and nurtures them in loving ways early, if there is not trust built, there is a real loss of the child's capacity to establish pleasure inside of relating, period, because the pleasure center in the brain is not being stimulated by the normal kinds of experiences that result from a connected childhood.
That may have been the case for Evan Ramsey, even though his life stabilized by the time he was 10, when he and William were placed in a school superintendent's home in Bethel. Although Evan was occasionally prone to angry outbursts, most of his teachers thought that he was learning to cope with life. But in reality,
everybody was telling me that it would get better just to ignore these people that are picking on me, and ignore this and ignore that. And I think just because I'm not paying attention to somebody, that's not going to make them disappear or go away or stop picking on me.
Bethel kids nicknamed Evan Screech, after a skinny, geeky kid in a TV sitcom. His brother William says some of the worst teasing was about one of the other foster kids that lived in their home who was convicted of being a child molester.
They thought he was molested, getting got by Sam. None of that is true what they were saying, though, but, you know, saying that he's all gay and stuff.
William says Evan worried about being labeled a homosexual and wonders if such teasing stoked Evan's need to prove his manhood. William was in class the morning his brother took a gun to school.
I heard a pop, and everybody's head was turned to the right, and then they all started running, and I could smell this funny smell like gunpowder.
That morning, Evan had borrowed a pair of William's baggy pants. William had no idea he wanted to wear them to hide a gun.
I saw Evan sitting right there, you know, just standing, and he's popping caps, and I went up to him, and I was like, "What you doing? You gotta put the gun down," you know, and then he wouldn't even hear me.
Evan Ramsey's father, Don, recalls being in the same state when he shot up the Anchorage Times newspaper office. Ramsey says he often battles with feelings of overwhelming depression, sometimes suicidal, and he believes that he and his son share the same trait. But the father stopped short of killing in his rampage, and Evan wishes he had too.
Taking a human life is not right, and I feel really bad about killing these two people. I can't really change anything, but if I were able to give my life in order to bring these two people back, I would.
Now, as Evan faces a life in prison, his father holds a small, nubby, stuffed red dog in his lap.
Well, I gave Woof Woof to John on his first birthday. And then when Evan was born, John gave Woof Woof to Evan. Then when William was born, Evan and John gave Woof Woof to William.
The dog followed Ramsey to prison.
I've had some real lonely times, and I was very happy that I had that little red dog with me so I could feel my boys. I can still feel it. I can feel the spirit of all three of my boys in there. And I think Evan will be able to also.
There is a photo of the Ramsey boys taken at a Christmas long ago. Their faces shine with joy. Yep, there's Woof in the background. Today, a symbol of childhood lost, a ghost from the nursery. Rhonda McBride, APRN, Anchorage.